Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com. Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Britain's new government is swinging the axe of austerity. Deep, deep spending cuts all over. A half million government jobs to be gone. A smaller military, shrunken welfare, retirement age up, taxes up. It's a breathtaking attack on debt and deficit. Will it work? Will it croak the economy, the country, or save it? This hour On Point, the British austerity plan, and what's ahead for the U.S.? You can join the conversation. Have you seen the scale of Britain's cutbacks? Is this brave? Is it batty? Could it, should it happen here? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first today from London is Alex Barker, reporter with the Financial Times. Alex, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
What's being promoted here? I mean, this scale, 20% across the board, almost every department in the British government. When's the last time you ever saw cuts like these?
The last time was probably just after the First World War, would you believe? At one point in over the last couple of years, Britain was borrowing about £1 in every £4 spent by the government, and the great reckoning has arrived now, and it's an incredible experiment with the economy. No one knows quite how it's going to work out. There are about £81 billion of cuts, which replicated in America is pretty much equivalent to your entire Medicare spending in 2015. And this is going much, much further than Margaret Thatcher would have ever dared to do. And we'll see how it works out.
We'll look at the elements of the plan, but what's the goal, Alex, to get from where to where in what time period?
Well, the goal is to reduce what they call the structural deficit. So that's the amount of the of spending that they don't think they'll make back in terms of growth over the next four or five years. And so that's about 4% of GDP. And actually, it just amounts to freezing spending over the next 4 years, because the upward pressures on the government in terms of pension spending and debt interest is so high that even freezing money is incredibly painful.
But the idea is, I'm looking here at 19, 20% cuts in the budgets of many departments across the board?
Absolutely. I mean, directly in terms of public sector workers, everyone will have a 3% pay cut to pay for their pensions, 20% off police funding, 60% off school building, the biggest cuts to the military since the end of the Cold War, about 20% off all sickness and other benefits to people of working age. Most of the departments in government are going to be cutting back on admin costs by about a third, and that will really mean that about 1 in 10 jobs in the public sector won't exist in 4 years' time.
Here's George Osborne, the Chancellor of the Exchequer in the UK, talking with Parliament about the steep cuts last Wednesday.
It is a hard road, but it leads to a better future. We are going to bring the years of ever-rising borrowing to an end. We are going to ensure, like every solvent household in the country, that what we buy we can afford, that the bills we incur we have the income to meet, and that we do not saddle our children with the interest on the interest on the interest of the debts that we were not prepared ourselves to pay.
George Osborne, last week in Parliament. Alex Barker, a lot of these cuts, they're coming right down the pike, but they haven't hit yet. Do the British people know what's coming at them? Has it been described?
Well, there is some support for this austerity program, but I think it's partly because everyone thinks the cuts are going to hit someone else. And in March, April, when the paychecks start coming in and everyone's wallets feel a bit lighter, I think there'll be a lot more problems. And George Osborne is very aware that he's going to be possibly the most hated man in the country after that.
Nearly 500,000 public sector jobs to be cut. That's out of, 4, 5, 6 million? I mean, that's a big percentage of people working for the government now to be out of jobs.
It is. And it's not all going to be kind of people marched out of the office. A lot of that will come from not filling jobs when people leave, from asking people to take early retirement. And so that might not be as painful in some ways as the directing impact on people's households. For the first time in maybe 20 years, your average family's income is probably going to go into reverse. They're probably going to have to pay double what they would have paid for their kids to go to university. They'll be paying much higher rates for their travel and for daily spending. And that's really where the pinch is going to be, I think.
And on top of that pinch, taxes are going up.
Absolutely. We've got a 2.5% rise in sales tax. That will be coming through in April as well, and various other kind of complicated tax measures that will leave most people a bit out of pocket.
How much of the military budget cut, and how will it be cut? There's some reductions, I think, in force here, but also, what, some big projects put on hold or off?
Yeah, there's about an 8% cut in the military spending, but actually it's much worse than that because there was a massive overspend before. We bought too much kit that we couldn't really pay for, and we're going to be in a situation over the next 10 years or so where we'll have aircraft carriers without any planes to fly off them. There are various cutbacks in each of the services. There's about, in total, about 40-odd thousand people in either civilians or armed forces that will be losing their jobs. It's pretty tough for them, and they certainly haven't seen anything like this since the end of the Cold War.
So is this back to the old image of you know, Britain, the little pot of tea on the steamer, and you know, little cold plate of bangers and mash? Is this really austerity coming?
Well, I think for a bit, yes. I mean, everyone seems to be quite stoic about it at the moment, mm-hmm. and a bit of that Blitz spirit. But it's not going to be as bad as people expect, I think. By kind of 2012, there might be a royal wedding and a royal jubilee and some bank sales, and who knows, the tax receipts might be a bit better than expected. And certainly the political direction for George Osborne is setting this, making the cuts deep enough so that there's a bit of extra leeway at the end to maybe offer some tax cuts before the election. So, you know, there's a bit of optimism built into the whole process as well.
Even the Queen taking her cuts on the royal budget there. What's the gamble in all this, Alex? You cover economics for the Financial Times. What's the gamble here? You take a lot of government spending out of the economy. I guess they're gambling that private spending will surge into that vacuum. But isn't that a big gamble?
Oh, it's a huge gamble, and really no one does know how it's going to play out. Today's growth figures weren't too bad, but we may see that with the massive cutbacks that the public-private sector just doesn't bounce back in the way that George Osborne hopes it will, and that we'll be going into a bit of a stagnation for a while, and that means that to meet his own spending targets, he'll be having to cut even further than he is at the moment, which kind of exacerbates the whole cycle. So there's a huge economic debate about this that has gone on since, you know, the days of Keynes, and George Osborne has gone down on one side. He's bet the farm on it, and really the fate of this coalition will rest on whether his judgment was right.
We're going to hear that debate right here, right now, on whether this may pop Britain out of a cycle of debt or pop it into, stagnation? Something worse? Alex Barker with the Financial Times in London. You're great to be with us. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Joining us now from London is Tim Besley, Professor of Economics and Political Science at the London School of Economics. From 06 to 09, he served as an external member of the Bank of England Monetary Policy Committee. He organized a letter signed by 19 other prominent economists, published in February in the Sunday Times, urging the British government to enact austerity measures for deficit reduction. Timothy Besley, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
What's the bet you're making here? Why did you push this? And what's the bet that the government's making in rolling into this big austerity program?
Well, and there's a couple of elements of this that Alex didn't touch on I'd like to emphasize.
Yes, please.
One is there's a bunch of reforms around this, particularly around what we're now calling the Office of Budget Responsibility, which is trying to put our public finances back on a transparent and coherent path. And what we were calling for back in February was to really underline the need to lay out the stall of what is the plan, and then to make sure that's properly evaluated, the risks are evaluated, and then we follow through on that. And what we have in the UK for the first time is an independent process for auditing these numbers. And I think that's really important. When you're viewing this context, it's not just about a 1 year of cuts. it's about a five-year program to restore credibility to the public finances. And that was really the main message of our letter back in February, because we were concerned that while naturally during a period of recession there's an increase in the deficit, there really wasn't a credible plan on the table to deal with that problem.
So now you'll get transparency, but what you'll see in that transparency is very large cuts to go at the debt and deficit. What about the gamble aspect of this? I'm looking here, Joseph Stiglitz, a Nobel Prize winner in economics, says that the British government plan is a gamble with almost no potential upside.
Well, I mean, I think I would stress some upside from this. I mean, the fact is, if you look at the terms on which the British government can borrow, they've improved dramatically since the coalition came in, and that means that the debt servicing we're doing on much more favorable terms.
Meaning greater confidence in your ability to pay that those debts off long term or cover them.
Exactly right. Mm-hmm. And I think there was an exaggeration of that position. People started saying, well, is the UK like Greece? Of course, that's nonsense. Yeah. But what is true is the terms on which you can borrow are dependent on whether or not people think you're going to repay it and over what horizon. And I think we've seen a significant improvement in the terms on which the British government can borrow as a consequence of laying out its stall in a clear way. So I wouldn't agree that there's no upside to this. Mm-hmm. Now, but equally, of course it's a gamble. We don't know the future mm-hmm. with any certainty. But the one thing I would say is when this is processed through pretty much anybody's economic model and everybody's taking a look at this, there is something off coming off growth, maybe around 0.5% off growth right. a year as a consequence of our austerity plan. But that has to be traded off against the benefits of putting this back on a stable and consistent footing.
And so you're looking at getting out of deficit spending in 5 years? Is that the goal?
Yeah, the idea is to bring to close the structural component of the deficit, as Alex said, by the end of the parliament, and that will bring the share of government in the UK back to around 41% of national income, which is where it started before. Before the recession. And, you know, when people say this is an ideologically based move, it's transparent from that, but that's just not right. This is just restoring the status quo before the recession. And in fact, that had grown, the Labour government had grown that from around 37% of the economy from 2001.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about radical austerity in Britain, the UK's hard new push to steeply cut national debt and spending, and whether that kind of push is coming here into the USA. We've been joined from London by Timothy Besley, a professor of economics, political science at the London School of Economics. He spearheaded a letter in the Sunday Times back in February saying we've got to get on top of debt and deficit and how we track it. He's a promoter of what's going on there. Also with us from London right now, Lord Robert Skidelsky, member of the British House of Lords, professor emeritus of political economy at the University of Warwick. He has written three-volume prize-winning biography of the economist John Maynard Keynes. Robert Skidelsky, Lord Skidelsky, welcome back to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
So you're the great Keynesian, but your country's going exactly the opposite direction. What's going on?
Well, George Osborne obviously isn't a Keynesian. I mean, he's an anti-Keynesian. He's taken one route, and I think I agree with what Alex Barker said. It's a terrific gamble. Because I don't think there's any sound economic theory behind it. I think the idea that if you cut the deficit, this will produce an upsurge in private sector spending is simply an assertion, and I don't see why it should. I think it depends on a judgment about confidence that I think is very implausible.
What about the notion that there's a time to just take the bitter medicine and that it won't be fun, but 3, 4, 5 years from now, the UK will have a clean slate and a brighter future?
Well, I think there's a lot to be said for taking bitter medicine, but I don't think I think the bitter medicine should actually produce an improvement in health. That's why medicine is often bitter. But if it doesn't, if in fact it prolongs the recession, then the bitter medicine will simply be a cost, and there'll be no benefit to it.
Timothy Beasley, what about it? There's the danger. You just prolong the recession or plunge back into it when you pull all that government spending out of the economy. What about that risk, Professor?
Of course, it's a risk, but it's nothing more than a risk as things stand. And as I said earlier, if you look at a whole range of people who are trying to look at this and put it through their economic models, they find that there is some fall in growth, and there is some more limited recovery, but it's not dramatic to the point of sending us back into what some people are saying is a double dip recession. Now, I grant you that if this does lead to a major loss of confidence, then we would need to rethink what's going on. But as things stand, I don't see that happening. And indeed, as Robert knows, the business community has broadly endorsed this plan. And they think it is a route towards improving confidence, not reducing it.
When do you think we'll know, Timothy Beasley, whether or not this is working or sending the country back into recession?
Well, I mean, there'll be no specific date at which we know that. We'll have to monitor all the signs and indicators, as all the policymakers do routinely. From my time as a policymaker, every number is pored over and its implications for the economy will be looked at. I don't think we can just say there's some indicator that eventually will say, fine, we're through this. It'll be a gradual sense, based on the way the data is coming out, that either this is being successful or it needs to be rethought.
How about the timetable, Robert Skidelsky?
Yeah, well, I just want to check. I just want to query one thing Tim said.
Yes.
It's not true that the business community is united behind this policy. In fact, Richard Lambert, head of CBI, said only a couple of days ago that cutting isn't the way back to recovery. And there is a lot of worry about this. And the fact is, as Tim admitted, there will be it will cost in growth. Now, it's all very well to say that's insignificant, but over 2 or 3 years or 4 years, I mean, a 0.5% reduction in growth adds up to quite a considerable loss of output, income, and employment. And it's more, in other words, you're taking more than a risk. You are actually conceding and acknowledging that growth will be slower under this program, but hoping that there'll be enough revival of confidence to offset that. And in fact, they don't even have very strong hope of that. What I think, it's an open secret, I think, that the Chancellor is relying on another bout of quantitative easing to get the economy moving again. So I think this is a deflationary budget program, and they're hoping for offsets. I think that's where the huge gamble lies.
We've got a lot of response here online on Facebook. Jeff says this will only work if the private sector takes on all those now jobless government employees, which I don't think he writes it can or will. Rob, Lord Robert, says it's a brave move and one which other nations should thoughtfully investigate as well. What about it? Might this be a model for the world, Robert Skidelsky?
No, I don't think it's a model. I think, in fact, it's a disaster because someone ought to be expanding when others are cutting. Now, within a country, it should be the government if the private sector is deleveraging. But over in a larger area, like the Eurozone, it should be one part of the Eurozone to offset the cuts that may be necessary in other parts. At the moment, when everyone is cutting simultaneously, large areas of the world, I don't see where the growth is going to come from. And I think that's just decent theory, a decent macroeconomic theory. And I think they're taking a huge gamble in the face of that.
But a lot of cutting going on right now in Europe. Permit me to bring our American listeners in here. Omaha, Nebraska. Christine, you're on the air with Timothy Beasley and Robert Skidelsky.
Hello. I just want to applaud the British government for having the courage to start thinking about the future children and their economies rather than the selfish implication that the economy of today is more important than their future. Yes, the British government will be going through a withdrawal. I wish our government had the courage to do the same thing. We are on a very heavy drug of feeling good about benefits and borrowed money, but I could not applaud the Brits for doing what they are doing to put their house back in order. And I just wish our own government would have the truthful fortitude to do the same.
Christina, I appreciate your call. Timothy Besley, what is it about the British political system that permits this? It's hard to picture 20% across-the-board cuts coming out of an American Congress. Politically, how did this happen in the UK?
Well, I think, it's at the heart of our political system. We typically govern by majority, and at the moment, although we don't have a single party in majority, we have a coalition which seems to be holding together now. Of course, there's some question mark of whether it will hold through a whole parliament. And as a coalition, it has more than half the votes in the House of Commons and can take this five-year view. And I think that's very interesting because the coalition has said they wish to see it through to the end of a full parliament and to implement a plan over 5 years. And I think it is a feature of the UK political system that such a five-year plan is possible.
And Lord Robert, you hear our caller Christine in Nebraska saying, "Bravo! You know, go USA, do the same."
Well, I would just ask her to think of the children of the extra unemployed. I mean, you know, if after 5 years a country's output is 3 or 4% less than it might otherwise have been, and if there are an extra several million unemployed, which I think may well be the case, then it's their children that suffer. It's not just the selfishness of the present generation that's at issue. I mean, they're also looking after the future of their children. And I think a strong, vigorous economy is much better for the next generation than a stagnant one.
Let's go to Mark in Nashville, Tennessee. Mark, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom. How are you?
Well, thanks.
Good. I'm familiar with a firm that has recently, in the UK, that has recently purchased a U.S. company to position themselves, at least in part, to position themselves for the upcoming austerity measures. They do a lot of work contracting for various government agencies there. And so they're looking elsewhere, specifically to the U.S., where they believe they can get more contracts and stay healthy during this time of austerity in Britain.
Mark, does that mean that they're not confident that there will be growth or economic activities sufficient in the UK because of this austerity? Is that what they're hedging against?
No, I think what they're trying to do is position themselves to make more money than they otherwise would during the coming austerity.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a case where they think they're going to go out of business as a result of it. I think it's just they're doing some investing overseas. And I was wondering if the panel had heard of any other firms that were doing the same thing. I don't really want to mention any names, but...
No, that's good. That's an interesting point, and I appreciate your call very much. Lord Robert, what about it? Global consequences here. There's one British firm investing in the U.S., as a kind of hedge maybe against the austerity in the U.K. Are you seeing that pattern? And what about the influence or the effect of what the U.K. and no small part of Europe are now doing and pulling in their horns on spending?
Well, I think it goes back to something I said earlier, which is that if there's austerity all around, then there's going to be very few sources of potential growth. And I think we're dangerously drifting into that situation where growth is very, very low, much below potential in most of the world. And then we have to include Japan in this too. And so we tend to hope that China will lift us out. And I think the other very, very great danger is that if sources of domestic demand are repressed, then I think countries will increasingly hope to rely on foreign demand, and that points towards currency wars and possibly protectionism. So it is it's crucial to expand domestic demand simultaneously in the major areas of the world in order to avoid competitive currency depreciations and protectionism. So I think the question is very, very valid.
Timothy Besley, here's a web comment, a web posting saying, how can anyone hope to make an economy stronger? Timothy, can you hear me? We may have lost Timothy Besley. I'll get a call then. Bill in Norwich, Connecticut. Bill, you're on the air.
Yeah, I applaud Britain in doing what they're doing. I think the U.S. needs to cut our government back to probably pre-Civil War days. Because let's face it, government creates nothing. Government can only take. And anyone who thinks that it's going to take the government spending to grow things, then obviously they believe that borrowing is the only way that you can make money. The way you make money is to produce something and make a profit. Government creates nothing, so they create no profit.
Well, but what about, I mean, they can surely help create security, stability, order?
No, they cannot, sir. Basically, how, like, the only thing government can do is take from the people. Power is supposed to flow from the people to government, not the other way around. And what we need is we really need a dose of what founded this country in this country, and I think that's what Britain is getting back to, and I really sincerely hope that they continue with it.
Yeah. Bill, let us pick it up. Of course, the founders in the U.S. did see a role for government. It may not be the one that you most prefer, but there was a role there. Lord Robert, you hear this sentiment. It's very strong. People look at this debt and they say, we have got to get away from it.
Well, you know, I disagree. Obviously, it goes against everything I've just been saying. And people were saying exactly the same thing when Roosevelt was president, exactly the same thing, that he was going to ruin the country, that he was a communist, that he was extending the role of government way beyond what its real capacity was. And I think, I think they still argue about this. But to my mind, Roosevelt was a great president. He did bring America out of the worst of the slump, and without him, America would have been in a much, much, much worse position than it turned out to be. So I think it's the same debate. You have the same economics. I'm not saying there's a right answer. I'm just saying who tells the most persuasive story about this.
How do cuts like these or this shift in emphasis change the character of a country, of a polity, of the interaction between, I don't know, wealthy and middle class and poor? Does it shift in an austerity time like is been laid out here?
Well, I think it depends on how the cuts are done. Obviously, but I think the danger is, and I think this is true here, that they're going to widen income inequality. You're going to have more people in poverty, and that of course affects the children growing up. You're going to have big cuts in education, the education budget. That of course affects lower income people, who rely more on the state to get their education. So I think there'll be a worsening of inequality. I think there'll be a souring of the social atmosphere. You're already having disturbances, social disturbances in Europe, in France, of course. I don't think we'll get them in Britain. I think in Britain, government has a lot of legitimacy. It can, on the whole, do what it wants to, because it, as Tim Besley said, if it has a majority. But I don't think the social atmosphere, as a result of these cuts, will be improved.
Timothy Besley, I think you're back with us. We've got callers saying, you know, bravo, do it worldwide. We've got others saying, no way. Here's a web posting saying, let me put this to you, how can anyone hope to make an economy stronger by cutting more jobs in a time when every job counts? This just doesn't make sense, our listener writes, and it is all done on the backs of the poor and workers in Britain. What an injustice. What do you say to that, Professor?
Well, I mean, I'll pick up on a point that Robert just made. Mm-hmm. Of course, the impact of these cuts, as was the impact of the whole recession, has fallen disproportionately on people who've lost their jobs. But equally, I think one of the interesting aspects of this, and I've been involved in this process as a public servant and as a trustee of organizations, people are rethinking their priorities and deciding what it is that they really want the state to fund. The government has made a decision to protect health spending, for example, on the basis that, that those demands are extremely acute, and moreover, people support them. So I think one has to be a little careful in painting a broad brush picture. This is an opportunity for a country to say, what do we really value to be provided publicly, and how are we going to provide a sustainable basis funding it both now and into the future? Because this challenge of overfunded public programs isn't going to go away even at the end of 5 years. There are issues around pensions and health. They're going to run and run. And so I think it's particularly important to take a stance now, not just for the next 5 years, but for the entire future, so that we have sustainable public services.
What if the United States did the same? What if they did just what the UK is doing? Could the global economy take that much austerity from UK and US and more?
Sorry, I'm losing you now again on the line. I'm afraid I didn't hear the
question. I'll put that question to you then, Lord Robert. What if the U.S. did the same thing? What would that mean for the global economy?
Well, of course, the U.S. is a much, much larger economy than Britain, and therefore its effect would be much bigger. I think if the U.S. Took the austerity route, that would be another blow to global recovery. And I hope it won't. And I think what's very interesting now is that there is a divergence here. The Americans are now going one way, and the British seem to be going one way, and the British seem to be going another way.
Yeah, we see that, and it is stark at the moment. We'll see where it goes after the November 2nd midterms here. Lord Robert Skidelsky and Timothy Besley, our great thanks to you both for being with us. We'll come back and look at the U.S. scene. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We've been looking this hour at the radical austerity program being laid out in Britain. Very deep cuts all over the place, plus higher taxes, all to go at the deficit. You heard the debate there from London on whether or not it's the right thing. There is a gamble here. Everyone concedes. Supporters are prepared to make it to get out from under the big deficit debt that Britain has accumulated. What about right here in the States? Let's turn the focus back home to look at the debate and perhaps the looming debate on this side of the Atlantic. We're joined right now from Arlington, Virginia, by Robert Bixby. He's executive director of the Concord Coalition. It's a group focused on fiscal responsibility. Robert Bixby, thank you very much for being with us.
Good to be with you, Tom.
And with us from New York is Peter Beinart, senior political writer for the Daily Beast. He was senior fellow at the New America Foundation. His new book is The Icarus Syndrome, A History of American Hubris. Peter, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Robert Bixby, first to you. Are your group wants to cut the deficit and cut the debt, and they want to do it right now? Are you jealous of what's going on in the U.K.?
Well, I think we're going to have to do something like that eventually. I don't know that we... I think the urgency here is to enact some sort of a plan that puts a deficit reduction goal in place. I think that there is still some room because the economy is still weak, that you don't necessarily want to start, you know, raising taxes or slashing spending next year, but you should help the short-term economy by putting a plan in place that shows that we have a sustainable fiscal situation. We're going to have to do it eventually, and I think there are aspects of the plan that they did in Britain that are good, such as balance. You know, they put taxes on the table, they put some entitlement changes on the table, so they put defense on the table, and we're going to have to look at the whole budget as well.
Peter Beinart, what do you see coming? There's a lot of noise from the Tea Party and expectation of Republicans gaining considerable seats in the Congress, whether or not they take majorities, and they may well. What do you see coming on the stimulus versus austerity debate in this country, Peter?
I think what I see coming is probably gridlock. I mean, we're not in the Tea Party people, Republicans will not be in a situation to do what happened in Britain. They don't control the executive branch. Barack Obama will have a veto. And it's very different. You have a British system in which you have enormous parliamentary control by the prime minister, so you can push through things like this. You couldn't do that as easily even if you had the presidency in the United States. You certainly can't do it from Congress. Besides that, The Republicans have not been nearly, I think, as honest as have Cameron and the Tories in Britain about basically being willing to put to make very, very difficult choices and to put everything on the table. Unlike Cameron, they haven't been willing to talk about tax cuts at all. Tax increases to deal with the deficit. Nor have they been talking about cutting military spending. So they've not really taken nearly as holistic a view of the budgetary situation as has Cameron. I mean, I agree with Robert Bixby that I think we should not be making these cuts now, given that I think what we need now is actually more stimulus. But I do think it would be very valuable to try to put some roadmap out there for the future kind of cuts that we're going to need to be making, cuts and tax increases, to eventually do something about the budget deficit once the economy comes out of recession.
Robert Bixby, have you looked at the math? I mean, if the U.S., you say we'll have to do it eventually, I'm sure it'll be debated perpetually, but what would it look like if the U.S. took on U.K.-scale cuts sized up to American scale? What would that look like?
Well, I think the cuts would be, I mean, it'd be quite substantial, and I don't know that you could put them into effect quite as quickly as Peter said. In a parliamentary system, it's easier to get them into effect right, more quickly than it would be in the United States. I don't know a dollar figure. You know what we would have to do, but I think that one of the things that that they are doing, that we're going to have to do is look at entitlement reform and the defense spending, and not just rely on some of the waste, fraud, and abuse that people complain about. That's not where the money is. I mean, where the money is in over the long term in health care and Social Security, more in the short term on defense, and then you really need to look at revenues.
Peter, is anybody putting out this kind of scale of attack on debt and deficit? I mean, John Boehnert and the Republicans talked about, I think, $100 billion savings. But that's chump change compared, you know, to what the U.K. is doing if you scale it to American size.
Well, I think it's important to distinguish the short and the long term. I mean, I think doing this in the long term, I mean, in the short term, I think would be a disaster. I think doing it in the longer term is very necessary. But I think the Republican Party does not have a track record of being particularly serious about dealing with the budget deficit. They certainly weren't under George W. Bush. And I think they show continued signs of lack of long-term seriousness because, first of all, they're worried about confronting health care costs for political reasons. But beyond that, there's an ideology which says you can never raise taxes. In fact, you have to keep cutting them. And you can never cut the defense budget. And I think that the lesson of the way America got out of the Reagan-era deficits in the 1990s is that you have to do exactly those things. Yes, you have to deal with entitlements. You have to get lucky with some strong economic growth, but you also have to deal with more revenues and with cutting the defense budget. And the Republican Party, by and large, is not talking, except for maybe Ron Paul, is not really talking about the latter two at all.
Tom, I think just to say, I think mm-hmm. the magnitude of the cuts would be somewhere around $600 or $700 billion dollars over 4 or 5 years. Just to put it into
yep.
to translate it, and no, nobody's talking about cuts of that size. Even if the Republican pledge, as you mentioned, is about $100 billion in cuts from programs that aren't the fastest growing.
It's interesting that the one thing, or among the very few things not cut in the UK, was their universal health care system, which was kept almost alone, exempt. Let's get our callers in here. Des Moines, Iowa. Tom, you're on the air. Tom.
Yes, I wanted to say I agree with most of what your analyst just said. I think the U.S. is not serious at all about cutting its deficit. It probably has a worse deficit than the Britons. But the Republicans aren't doing anything. The Democrats want to spend our way out of the recession. So nobody is yet serious about what problems this deficit may cause.
Let us pick it up. Peter Boehnert, I think actually the U.S. debt is not quite as bad as the U.K.'s from what I've read here. But what about the cutting versus stimulus? I mean, you still have the argument in this country. We heard it a little bit from Robert Skidelsky there, that they still need to spend to get out of the recession. Paul Krugman would say you've got to have more of spending. Is the stimulus drive over? Is the country ready, Peter, to turn and go to austerity?
I think the truth is that the country is neither ready to go for British-style austerity nor for stimulus, which is why I think we're going to have a period until the 2012 election in which I don't think we're going to have much of anything significant in policy terms except maybe some small cuts and a lot of political shouting. I mean, to make it clear, I think that Krugman and Skidelsky are right. I do think the stimulus was not large enough. I think we need a larger stimulus, although I think what Robert Bixby is saying is right. I think ideally you would combine that larger short-term stimulus
mm-hmm.
with some kind of a credible long-term statement about how you're eventually going to start to reduce the deficit, because that's the terribly difficult situation we're in. We need this kind of this 1-2 step of more stimulus to get us out of this terribly deep recession, then followed by once there's private sector demand, a move towards the government actually dealing with its deficit situation. I think that unfortunately, we're going to get neither. We're not going to get the next stimulus we need, nor, I think, are we likely to get the really serious bipartisan statement of fiscal resolve over the long term.
Let's get a call from Kathy, Worcester, Massachusetts. Kathy, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I want to say I do agree with a lot of what your panelists have been saying. I just called to disagree with the caller earlier who said that the government shouldn't be in the business of creating jobs or spending. I wanted to say I think that is exactly the government's job. We have so many concerns as U.S. citizens, whether it be environmental or wildlife protection or legitimate concerns that we have as U.S. citizens and as citizens in the world community. I would say that we need to keep those federal jobs, keep the state jobs, and learn to cut in other places. And one of the first places I would look would be get the lobbyists out of politics. We have some serious money tied up there with just the politics.
Yeah, I'm all for that, and who doesn't understand that? But what about, I mean, don't you see the private economy, the private sector ultimately generating the wealth that feeds the government and makes it possible for it to have people out there monitoring the environment, Kathy?
Yeah, I think absolutely. We need to improve our budget. We need to improve our economy. We need to cut taxes for small businesses to create jobs, not be giving tax credits to giant oil companies. You know, I think there are ways to encourage growth on a smaller scale, which always seems to be, the professionals always say that's where a lot of the jobs come from. But at the same time, I think to be good world citizens and good U.S. citizens, we need to keep those jobs and in the U.S. government, you know, whether it be environmental, like I said, or wildlife protection or the bridge work, infrastructure.
We got it, Kathy. I appreciate your call very much. Robert Bixby. The people in the UK are now facing this head on. These are going to start biting, hitting next year. We'll see how that goes down. And you can hear in our callers this hour, and every time we talk about this, people want to deal with this. But do you think Americans understand what it will take to address our deficit? Do you think this country is politically ready to, and maybe a combination of stimulus, but there's also bullet biting in there somewhere, I guess. Is this
I'm not sure. I mean, I think the public clearly is in the mood to address the deficit. However, I don't think we're in a position to do it right now politically, because you get both parties pandering to their base, and if you take all entitlement reform off the table, you take revenues off the table, you can't do it. So you get both political parties out there promising a free lunch and blaming the other side. And so instead of, you know, the political system is producing a dynamic right now which is exactly opposite of what we need to sit down and try to address this problem. And you can see that with the press coverage of the president's fiscal commission. Some rumor will come out about some, you know, a Social Security reform or a tax increase that they might be considering, and somebody will leak a story and try to get the interest groups all ginned up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we can't, we're not going to be able to solve the problem that way. So I think the public, if the public were addressed in an intelligent way, I mean, if the President of the United States were to get up and, you know, after the election is over in January, State of the Union address, I think he ought to do like a Ross Perot chart talk and just mm-hmm. say, look, here's what we got. We got a short-term problem. We got a long-term problem. We can still afford to do some stimulus, so long as it's targeted, properly targeted, and we have a long-term sustainability plan that's credible in place, and that's what we're going to try to do here. And let's, you know, roll up our sleeves and work together. I think the public would then respond to that. So I think the unwillingness to make some of these hard political choices is driven somewhat by the political dynamic.
Yeah, no question. Peter Beinart, how about it? Do you think the country's ready for that chart talk on the other side of the election? Sort of put it up on the board, Ross Perot style, and here's what we're going to do with the kind of Congress we're likely to have. Will that chart talk lead to action?
Well, Obama has proven to be at times a very effective communicator and a very clear and lucid speaker. I think the problem, though, is that realistically, the people who have been elected, assuming the Republicans have a big win, will feel essentially that their mandate, rightly or wrongly, they will feel their mandate is to basically oppose the Obama administration and certainly to oppose any new stimulus. I mean, I think they're wildly wrong. I think there are, a lot of them are completely economically illiterate. But I think that's going to be the message that the Republican Party takes from its victories. And so I think it's going to be extremely difficult, even if Obama communicates that well. There may be some small-scale compromises he can find with the Republicans, but I think, unfortunately, the moment at which that kind of talk could have had the maximum impact, I fear, has passed.
We looked at the UK. Let's get a little Canadian perspective in here. Salim in Montreal, Canada. Salim, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to point out here that this discourse, unfortunately, is always going to be a case of all or nothing in the American context. You look at the government in Great Britain and you say, oh, they're slashing left and right. But it's all about making the right choices at the right time. I mean, government has an important role to play, and the free market has an important role to play, and it's a question of governments making the right choices at the right time so that they cut budgets when the economy is going well, as opposed to, you know, what Britain's doing now, where their back's against the wall and they have to cut everything at the last, at this time and place. But it's not all or nothing. And I fear that point is being missed in all of this.
The sober, moderate Canadian perspective, and I guess props to you right now. Canada's in relatively good shape here. What about it, Bob Bixby? We've got this 18-member commission that the president has put together after Congress would not act. Republicans blocked that. They're supposed to come out, by December 1st with some kind of proposal. Is that our way out of all or nothing conversation here? Do you see something significant, real, doable, coming out of their recommendations?
Well, that was the hope originally. I hope that they produce something, but the polarization that's going on now in the campaign is not a good precursor for that sort of a report. The political what you're going to have to get at is something that Peter mentioned, and what has to be overcome is that if the message that's taken from the campaign is a mandate to frustrate the current administration, it's very unlikely that there would be any sort of negotiation, taking place. If the mandate is the public is angry and angry with both parties and simply wants the politicians to do something about the economy and the rising debt, then they will do something about it. So I guess I'm not as hopeful as I wish I was about what the mandate will be coming out of the election.
But maybe there's a little window of hope for a practical, effective response right there. And all the while, we'll be watching across the Atlantic as the UK goes forward with this big experiment. Robert Bixby at the Concord Coalition, thank you very much for being with us this hour.
You're welcome.
And Peter Beinart at the Daily Beast. Thanks for joining us, Peter.
Thank you.
Listeners, thanks for being here. This is On Point.